Would you like to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. by making a regular, monthly, tax-deductible gift? We've made it easy for you to donate using automatic withdrawal. Simply fill out and mail the automatic billing authorization form under the donate page of our website, issuesetc.org. No more writing monthly checks or making monthly PayPal contributions. Issuesetc.org. Click donate and fill out and mail the automatic withdrawal form. Thanks for your support.
I think I said, "You're joking." I burst into tears. I just could not believe what he was saying. And I kept thinking, there's a baby inside of me. It's not mine. What are we going to do? And then I already knew what we had to do.
We're willing to do whatever it takes to give this baby a chance at life, to have a normal life, even though this child had a very unusual start.
That's Carolyn Savage of Ohio and Shannon Morrell in Michigan. Two mothers, the babies are mixed up. Now, we usually think you leave the hospital, you walk out with the wrong baby. Not so in this case. It's in vitro fertilization, and the wrong baby is in the wrong womb. Of course, the baby is going to come to term, and that is always good news. But how does this happen? We're going to talk with Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morris for the next 10 minutes of the program about mislabeling, losing, misimplanting embryos at in vitro fertilization clinics. We'll also talk with her briefly about pro-gay video that is used in some California schools. They're trying to get it out of the schools, or at least letting the kids opt out of watching it. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is a regular guest, founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities. She's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics, and she joins us from Hampton University on the road. Jen, welcome back.
Thanks for having me on, Todd. I'm glad I was able to do this interview today.
What brings you to Hampton University?
Well, Hampton University is a historically black college in Hampton, Virginia. It's the school that Booker T. Washington went to. And the psychology department, the head of the psychology department here, is very, very high on marriage and is very keen that marriage culture should be reestablished in the black community. And so we're here at the first national summit on marriage and family and parenting here at Hampton University. And so it's a gathering of marriage movement leaders, black and white, who are here trying to inform one another, encourage one another, and just basically try to rebuild a culture of marriage for us all.
This is a bizarre story, not the only one of its kind, but the story of Carolyn Savage and Shannon Morrell. Carolyn is carrying Shannon's baby. She didn't want to. She didn't mean to. But she is, because of a mix-up of the embryos. What's the lesson to learn from this story of a mother who has already now given birth to this child misimplanted?
Well, I think the real lesson to this story is that the church's traditional teaching that all of this kind of separation of sex from procreation and from the marital act, that all of this stuff is profoundly and gravely wrong, and that it's deeply morally problematic to be separating conception from the marital act. Let's just put it that way. And so what's happened here is that this type of confusion, of course, couldn't possibly have happened if you were having babies the old-fashioned way. You know, it can only happen in the laboratory. And given that you're doing this stuff in the laboratory, this sort of thing is bound to happen. I don't think we should be too shocked or surprised about it. I think the great message of it is that this mother, the mother who turned out to be the surrogate mother, the carrying mother, or the gestational mother, that's what they call it, the gestational mother had a big enough heart to say, I am going to carry this baby to term even though it isn't mine. There are cases, and there have been cases, where these mix-ups have occurred, where the gestational mother said, forget it, I'm not carrying somebody else's baby, and had an abortion. And that led left the other family certainly with a broken heart. And so this situation is bound to happen. A certain number of these cases are simply bound to happen, Todd.
Very briefly, there are those who must take the recourse of in vitro fertilization if they want to have children. It's physically impossible for them in the conjugal act to conceive of children. But it sounds like this goes far beyond that. This goes into, as you have said, the radical separation of sex from childbearing, not only in this case, but in so many other examples in society.
That's right. See, the fact that this the gestational mother had enough moral grounding to carry the baby to term is unusual. It's surprising, you know, because when you've taken this many steps to separate sex from procreation, you really have done something, you know, extremely unnatural and something that is, you know, that is disruptive to the whole natural process. It used to be when people were unable to conceive naturally, they would say, well, now we'll adopt, or, well, I guess God has something else in mind for us besides having our own genetic children. And so what happens with the in vitro fertilization industry, the whole biotech industry, what happens with it is that it leads people to see themselves as the author of their own futures in a way that, you know, really God is the author of life. I mean, we can say that on Lutheran Public Radio, can't we, Todd? I mean, if God is the author of life, we are not the author of life. And so oftentimes what happens is that people just become obsessed with getting the outcome that they want, without realizing that, you know, really, really God's been in charge of this whole thing the whole time. You know, so we really open ourselves up to some very difficult and problematic things.
We'd like to stop these films from being shown, but more importantly, for these schools to realize that promoting transvestitism, promoting homosexuality, all the way down to the kindergarten level, is a complete breach of parental trust, and we want them to allow parents to opt their children out of it. That's what we're all about, to make sure that parents' rights are respected. It's simple, and many schools don't understand that.
That's Brad Dacus of the Pacific Justice Institute, representing a group of parents who are protesting pro-gay videos being shown in some California schools. Shows a young man going into a women's dressing room, changing to a bikini, and then seducing young men on the beach. It's rather odd fare for children of grade school age, don't you think, Jen?
Well, it looks like kind of odd fare for anyone of any age, if I may say that. You know, it's like, it doesn't even quite make sense, you know. So this person that they're depicting in this video, to me, seems, this doesn't look like an alternative lifestyle. This looks like a really deeply confused person, you know, to dress in women's clothes and to do this in a public place and then to go try to seduce men. Whatever happened to privacy? I thought we had this great right to privacy. But here we're having this blasted out their faces with this sort of very odd set of preferences. Are we really supposed to just call this preferences? That we're supposed to accept it, and not only accept it, but in a public place, you know, we've really completely lost our moral bearings here with this, with this issue.
So, how do you respond to someone who says, "Look, this exists in society. Our kids are going to have to grow up, and at the very least, be truly tolerant of this kind of phenomenon in society. And so, we need to educate them in the public schools about the existence of this. And this doesn't necessarily have to be the promotion of the gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual agenda."
I think that is really fundamentally dishonest, Todd, for this reason. Because if you explain to people that something exists, you can't really just explain to them that it exists without any social context whatsoever wrapped around it. I mean, if you're trying to explain this exists, and therefore what? Therefore what? What's the next step? Therefore this person is disturbed and needs a psychologist. Therefore this person is just like everybody else except for this quirky little preference that he has. Therefore, this person should keep this to himself because it's really his business and what he does in private is okay. Those are three very, very different positions to take with respect to this. And to pretend that all you're doing is telling people, well, it exists, that's not true. It's not possible to just say, well, it exists. You have to wrap some kind of context around it. And I feel quite certain, even without seeing knowing all the particulars of this thing, that what the parents find objectionable is that they're not just saying, oh, isn't it sad that this person has these preferences that are really going to make them unhappy and this guy's obviously really confused. That's not the message of the video. If that were the message of the video, I expect people would be handling it quite differently. So I think the idea that you're just trying to inform small children about this stuff, that doesn't make sense. And besides, there's a whole question of what's age appropriate. You know, for heaven's sake, people don't need that information in elementary school, that's for sure.
Jen, one more question on that with only a minute. It's a cartoon they're showing the kids, and there are things that you will watch in a cartoon that if it was actually live action, some guy on the beach walks into the women's dressing room, comes out with a bikini on, and starts flirting with men on the beach, even people who advocate for the lifestyle would say, nah, that's probably not the way we want to present it to our kids. Your thoughts there with 1 minute.
Yeah, that's what struck me as odd about the video, to tell you the truth. I'm thinking, who made this? Was this planted by anti-gay people trying to make gay people look foolish? I mean, I couldn't quite get that this was a gay propaganda film or quite what the point of the whole thing was. So, I think that there's a very mixed or at the very least confused message. But I think that the conflict here could be resolved fairly straightforwardly if the schools would simply have this rule taught. All they need to do is say, the rule is that you opt in to any kind of material having to do with sexuality or sex or marriage. Parents have to opt in. That is, you have to affirmatively say, yes, I want my kid to watch this. To say we want the right to opt out, that's not good enough, because that gives way too much power to the school to set the agenda. And it's much too easy for the school to say, oh, yeah, we gave them the opt-out option. It was in one sheet of paper stuck in among 50 other sheets of paper, and you had to turn it in and all of that stuff. I think a lot of parents have been through that type of stuff where ostensibly you have the right to opt out, but in fact you can't figure out how to exercise the right to opt out. I think it would be much better if the basic rule was you have to opt in, and then the parents would really be in the driver's seat of this kind of material. But, of course, you'll never see the schools agreeing to that, at least not in California for the time being.
Folks, stay informed on issues social, moral, and cultural by checking out the website for the Ruth Institute. Just go to our website first, issuesetc.org. Click on demand and look for Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse and the Ruth Institute. Dr. Morse is founder of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at George Mason and Yale Universities, and she's author of the books Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jen, thank you.
Thank you.
When we come back, Dr. Lewis Brighton is going to take us through St. Michael and All Angels, remembered by the church on this day, Tuesday, September the 29th. Dr. Lewis Brighton of Concordia Seminary in St. Louis is our guest after this. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. That means we rely on you for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio and send it to LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for your support.
Greetings from your friends at Zion Lutheran Church, Muscoda, Illinois, a proud supporter of Issues Etc. Zion Lutheran is a welcoming, family-friendly church that's firmly grounded on the unchanging truth of God's Word. We receive God's gifts of grace in a timeless, reverent way each Sunday morning at 10 o'clock. Zion Lutheran is located at 101 South Railway in Muscoda, Illinois. Zion Lutheran is a church home that's both faithful and friendly, and you'll be warmly welcomed. For more information, call 618-566-7345.
Often imitated, never equaled. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Meet a pro-life congresswoman.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Ileana Ross Leighton, who represents Florida's 18th Congressional District, is one of the pro-life women in the 111th Congress. She was born in Havana, Cuba, earned a Ph.D. from the University of Miami, and was the first Hispanic ever elected to Congress. She was elected to Congress in 1989 after serving in both the Florida House and Senate. Congresswoman Ross Leighton has been an outspoken champion on the life issue since day one, and recently was among four U.S. representatives to introduce legislation to reinstate the pro-life Mexico City policy after it was repealed by President Barack Obama.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. To join us in our battle for life, visit our website at sba-list.org.